G'day trail runners, welcome to episode 12 of the Trail Runners Experience. On today's episode, I get to sit down with Beck Butler, an inspirational ultramarathon runner who has an incredible list of runs under her belt. And Beck runs ultra long distances. And in today's podcast, we're talking about her experience at the Bigfoot 200 in the United States. And Beck shares some amazing insights into running mindset and dealing with the highs and the lows. And she also gets to talk about her amazing shop, which is BKT Trail in Adelaide. Sit back, or sorry, no, don't sit back. Put your running shoes on, headphones on, and enjoy the show. All right, I am sitting here in BKT Trail, Adelaide's only trail-specific running shop, and I'm sitting with the owner, Beck Butler, who is also happens to be an amazing runner. How's it going, Beck?
I am fantastic, thank you, Daniel.
Very good. Now, so glad that I can come and talk to you about your amazing running experiences in your awesome shop.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here.
Yeah, no, it's cool. So, I love the shop. I'm looking at all these beautiful shoes that I want to buy.
And yeah,
I could,
me too.
You know, go on a shopping spree. Yeah. And but no, there's things to maybe drop hints to the family for Christmas and birthdays. And
yeah, maybe I could do that. People can come in and just put stickers on things that they like.
For family.
Yeah, for family can come in, and like they do with pictures, like in galleries.
Oh, yeah. Like you earmark them. Yeah.
Earmark them, yeah.
That's a great idea.
No. Yeah.
So you've recently, so before we jump into it, maybe tell us a little bit about like who you are and, you know, where you come from as a runner, you know? So you've obviously got a big story. I want to ask you all about your running endeavours, but where did it all start?
It started when I was living on Groot Island, and I've always run, and I was running.
So Groot Island, that's up in the Northern Territory, isn't it?
Yeah, in the Gulf of Carpentaria, and I would be running along the freeway where all the toll trucks are, and in the gym, and a crazy teacher asked me what I was training for, and I said, I just always run, and he said, well, if you're going to run, then you need to run a marathon, and he'd run a marathon, and when I heard it, it made sense.
Yeah.
So he would pick me up.
So were you in high school at the time?
No. This was way. At high school, I was a hockey player.
Right.
And that's what always had me running for training. This was in 2010 or something.
Oh, right.
2009. So he would pick me up in the morning at about 5 a.m. after he'd been to the gym already.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and then he would drop me down near the mine site, which is near the indigenous township of Anurugu, and he would drop me off down there a few mornings a week, and then I would run the 16 to 20 k's back again, and he would drop me off, go back to Aliangola, and then he would get ready and then drive back down again to go and teach at the school down there.
Right.
So he just did this, and that progressed to running the Gold Coast Marathon.
Yes.
And I knew that from living and or growing up in the bush, really, that I would end up wanting to run trail runs, it was the mind stuff. I knew that the longer you went, the more that your mind came into play a bit. So even though Gold Coast Marathon was my first run, I knew that's where I would end up. And I think it was probably maybe that first run as well that I met Mari Ma from Traveling Fit.
Yeah.
And so through Mari Ma, went to the Paris Marathon, and then through Mari Ma, chatting to her, went to the Marathon des Sables, and that's probably where it all really started.
The was Marathon des Sables, that's a big jump from just a regular marathon.
I was really scared.
For those that don't know, that's the Marathon of the Sands, isn't it?
In
the Sahara.
Yeah.
That was the first ultra marathon I ever even heard of. I met a guy that did it, and I just thought he was like a god that he'd completed.
I know,
it.
It's crazy.
I thought he was he was a very fit guy, and he was just head to toe, like fit, you know. But like, looking back now, it's quite human.
Yeah. It's bonkers, isn't it? And I guess because it was a grandfather of multi-stages, it just had so much prestige up against it. And Discovery Channel had called it the hardest race in the world, wasn't it? So, and that's it. I mean, that's obviously, we all know that everyone wants that title or it doesn't, I mean... Yeah.
It changes from year to year now.
Yeah, well,
there's always
just,
a harder
race. Yeah, you could just tell people, and I say this, you could just tell people that in this race you're not allowed to wear shoes. And
exactly.
That makes it hard.
Everyone's got to carry lead weights or something.
Yeah, and blindfolded, and then that becomes the hardest. But so that was really scary kind of going into it. The long day was about 87K. So at that point, my longest had been 42.195. So I was really scared. So it was really good to be really scared, not scared in the backyard, but scared in the middle of the Sahara. And that was my first nighttime running too, which I thought was going to be spooky, then realizing it's spectacular. But and it was born from there. So that family that I kind of met in those four different tents, the Australians and the New Zealanders, just became a family.
How'd you go with the heat there? Because it's pretty hot.
I think that Australians, from everywhere I've gone and how heat affects people, I think Australians deal with the heat better than most.
Yeah, right.
I think it's when Australians go to a race and hear that's going to be hot, they know they've got an advantage.
Oh, really?
Even though we will say it's hot and we can feel
everyone
the heat.
Everyone feels the heat, yeah.
Absolutely, and we do that, but we tolerate it better.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Well, hooray, go Australia in the driest, one of the driest continents in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, in Adelaide too, I mean, I don't know, you sound like you've moved around a fair bit, but it's a very dry heat here. So, I don't know, I mean, training for something like that...
I trained in summer, I would train. I might not head out till the middle of the day and start. And I was running through 30 to 40 degree days.
Just to get your body used to it.
And
get used
sleeping
to consuming
in.
That much.
Because
you've got to drink that much. Like, I tell a lot of my runners about, what they call it, drift with your heart rate. When it gets really hot, the thing that... The dehydration makes your heart rate shoot up.
Yeah.
So obviously, how well adapted you are, because I mean your blood is mostly water, mostly H2O.
Yeah.
And so first thing that happens, you get dehydrated, you lose it out of your blood plasma.
Yeah.
And then you go, so you're sweating profusely. If you're sweating it all out to keep cool, your heart has to pump harder to compensate to get the oxygen around.
Yeah.
Because
right.
there's not as much. Volume in there.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why people like, well, hydration is so important, but it is a very difficult balance to get right.
Yeah.
And I mean, statistically more people die of hypnatremia, which is
too much
water than dehydration.
And we hear a lot of that, I'll drink to thirst, but I think some people go, but I don't know what my thirst is.
Yeah.
Which is, what's my thirst?
Yeah. my philosophy has just always been, drink small amounts, but often.
Yeah, common sense. Hey, just be sensible.
Yeah.
I think the other really great thing about the Marathon de Sable was that there was so much literature around... There wasn't a lot of literature around nutrition and hydration, but there's a lot of literature around gear. And so my very first big run was... I think there was more literature and advice than anything else.
Yeah.
So we went there absolutely, like, well-prepared.
That would be a bit overwhelming almost, though.
Yeah, like, it does actually scare the bejesus out of you, which is cool, which is great.
Yeah.
It's great to be spooked and then come out of the end of it and go, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And so you completed that. And what is it, 5 days? Is it 5 days?
6 days. Oh. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days or 7 if you run the long day over 2 days. And the last day though, which I really really love at the MDS compared to lots of other races, is the last day. So you kind of finish and get your medal, but you're still out in the desert. And then the Paris Opera, musicians orchestra, what are they called?
The Philharmonic
Orchestra? Like that. It's not quite, but it's like that. They came over and played for us in the desert.
Music or singing? Like, were there instruments?
It's just so long ago now. I'm thinking maybe it was the opera. Maybe there was more music, but maybe somebody was
the
singing.
Choir, yeah.
You know, I really can't. Maybe it was a choir.
So something pretty epic.
Yeah, there'd be people listening going, this is what it was.
We're so educated.
Yeah, but they, and then the next day.
It's a running podcast. It's not it's not an arts podcast.
Paris musicians came over and played for us in the desert.
Yeah.
And then the next day we put on the Oxfam t-shirts.
Yeah.
And it's a charity walk. And I love that for a number of reasons. One is that it's 7Ks, which is not...
Stretch the legs out a bit.
It's nice. It's a lot of people may start to run it, but it's kind of... You're supposed to walk it together in unity.
To get to be friends, yeah.
Yeah, and I get that that's a really great thing for something like Oxfam, but even more so if we reduce that to our run world, to finish a race but still be in it and have everyone together. The other multi-stages I've done, you're still racing until it's over. And this is really special. It's a really special... The 7Ks is really special.
Yeah. That'd be fun. They're a great way to finish it off, you know?
It's unity. Yeah.
I think that is one of the things about the sport generally, the sport of trail running, that I think is unique.
You know,
like it's pretty, I mean, even in races,
there's
a real inclusiveness. And, you know, I've never, you know, even here in Adelaide, it doesn't matter if the fast guys could be flying past you, but they'll still be nice and they'll still say hello, you know? If you're at the front of the pack or at the back of the pack, it's just a real, I don't know, I think it's okay to race. It's great to race.
Yeah.
I love to race, but like, it is nice how happy everyone is.
Yeah, just, I think so too.
You don't get as much in road running. Like I like the road races too, but it feels like everyone's right. I'm a slave to those splits. You know,
got to
run those splits and can't talk to anyone.
Put my earphones in and off I go. I think so too. I met Nikki Kimball at this one, and we've become really good friends since.
But really?
She came up behind me on the long day, and she does. It's just like she yells out to you and she hugs you and she gives you a good chat. She's racing. She won that year. So she's racing, but she's still stopping and chatting and embracing the people that she knows. I mean, she's an awesome, awesome, awesome woman. But
she I saw that great documentary, Finding Traction.
Traction.
Oh, I cried. It's probably one of my favourite. She's so beautiful you know, she just wears her heart on her sleeve.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sign of real intelligence, the way that she conducts herself.
Like, and she, like when she, because she went really low, she was trying to break the record on that long trail.
Yeah.
And she uses the emotion almost like fuel, you know?
She's watching the editing of it. And I would obviously be saying, no, you've got to keep that bit in.
Yeah.
You've got to keep those bit when she's at that. I mean,
she's won countless races outright, hasn't she? Like she, and this is something I wanted to ask you about. She's a classic case of like a woman who has leveled the playing field, you know, in the sport. Like, you know, because you know she's not just first woman. You know, she's first.
Absolutely. And how well she's done at Western States shows that as well.
Yeah. So, Marathon de Sables. And so most recently, we'll come back to some other stuff, but we'll fast forward to just the last few weeks and you've come back from a rather big race in the States. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, for sure. I have just got back from being in the Pacific Northwest in Washington State around the Cascade Mountains, where I ran the Bigfoot 200, which is a 206.5 mile point to point race.
200 miles, that's over 320 kilometers if you're playing at home.
It's about 330 k's, and point to point, part of Candace Burt's Destination Trails Triple Crown. So they have the Bigfoot in Washington State, followed by Tahoe, around Lake Tahoe, California, and then Moab in Utah.
Right. And so you've done the other one, the Tahoe.
I've done Tahoe.
You haven't done the Moab one?
Not yet.
All right. Are you going to get the Triple Crown one day?
Yes. Well, I won't get the Triple Crown. I won't do all three in 1 year because I won't go back and do... I mean,
You'd have to almost stay there for the whole time,
Yeah, for
you?
Sure. A mate of mine's going back to do it. Dave Giles is going back to... He did the Triple Crown last year and stayed there and did some... He's amazing.
Yeah.
And then this year... Because he just puts his head down and just keeps moving. But and this year he's doing a bit of here and back. So that's a lot more difficult. But it'd be great and fun to do them all in 1 year. But more importantly to me is doing them,
You're allowed to be competitive. I know, but from what you've told me already yesterday, saying, you know, competition in these kinds of races almost is almost rude.
Yeah.
Almost,
yeah. Yeah. Most. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Absolutely. Yeah. It just becomes inconsequential. No one.
Yeah.
People are. You will always be wondering where you are and how well you went because you, that's how you judge by. You judge yourself by how well you've
it's
gone.
It's human nature. Of, yeah. To a degree.
Yeah. Like how do you? Yeah. Like just knowing. Otherwise, we can just wander off and do it on our own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you don't like no one. Like I had no idea because I didn't have crew. I had no idea where I was placed the entire time because you would never come into an aid station and ask.
Yeah.
It's just not what it's just not done. You don't even think about it and you don't go to the finish line and ask either. So I didn't know until my MDS sort of family group chat were talking about that where I'd come and that was the first time I knew.
Yeah.
But it was how it was from them.
So you did it. So you ran the 330 kilometers with how many thousands of it's quite hilly.
Stacks of mountains. Yeah.
And so like maybe take us through some of that. First of all, just statistic, how many hours did it take you?
I can't remember. I don't know that either. I think it was about maybe 83, 84, 82 hours. And I think the cutoff's 110 hours maybe.
Oh, so well inside the cutoff.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I mean, I'm so used to, like I've always said, like 100 kilometres is the furthest I've gone. And you know, I like that. It's nice.
It's a great distance. Yeah.
It's all said and done within a day. You know, I can go home and sleep that night. It's not to say I'm not interested in multi-stage things, but at the moment, it's mind-blowing to me. And like people go, oh, how can you run 100 kilometres? That's insane.
Yeah.
But then so I feel like it's relative. Then I look at, okay, how can you run 200 miles? Like, so first, before we get to your training, tell us a little bit more about the race and sort of if you can take us through maybe obviously it would take a long time to go through all of it but maybe the highs and lows and or some of the experience of the day.
So it was pretty exciting kind of heading off knowing I'd run Tahoe already, so that was pretty nice. Tahoe was such an amazing experience, so I went into Bigfoot knowing I was going to have an amazing experience. So anytime I run any of these big races, I know that I'm going to be a different person when I finish. I know I change.
Yeah.
For all the really wonderful reasons. So that kind of really sort of excites me. But and heading off, and people had been saying how much they'd loved Bigfoot, people who'd run it before. So it was really, really exciting. We headed off, and then the first day is a really interesting day in that we're not necessarily in the mountains where we're going over this massive area that's called the Boulder Field, and I'd heard about the Boulder Field when I was in Tahoe.
I've seen the pictures of that. It looks hellish.
Yeah, and it's not so bad, but it's hellish when people are flying along there. And I am really, like, I love going fun on the downhill, but over the Boulder Field, I don't want to do anything that's going to cause me to roll an ankle
or something. And so that's early on.
Really, really early on. So we do a bit of a climb and then we're straight into the Boulder Field, which is great. So you're going over it when you're not fatigued.
So scrambling.
Yeah. And I got really like little legs, like they're short. So somebody came past, Dion came past and just said, this is where long legs are handy.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it, we're in the blast zone. And coming from spending time up north, I thought the blast zone was a mining area. But it's not. This is where Mount St. Helens erupted in the early 80s. So there used to be all this forestry.
Yeah.
And I think cabins for school groups to come up to. And it was amazing. But now there's nothing. And it's massive.
So it hasn't regrown
region.
Since.
Well, that's what I don't understand. I'd have to look more into that because that's what I'd asked my companion at that time, saying I would have thought with all the volcanic soil that things would have grown back or they would
even
have
better,
planted.
You would think. Yeah.
But nothing. Sort of. So that was, and it was really, really, really hot. So that was a really difficult day. And as you can imagine, in these mountains, and it's all quite. There's not a lot of foliage around. That what happens when the sun starts to set. I mean, it's beautiful. The colours that are against all the rocks and the sunset. So then the starkness just turns to beauty. And then as soon as you're getting into that first night, you start to feel like you're in it. Like as soon as it turns into night, you're suddenly in the race.
Oh, okay.
You're in the event. You're not. You've left the outside world and you're in. And then that night,
interesting way to put it.
Yeah,
left the outside world. Yeah,
yeah, it's real, and that's my. Then that's when I start to get to my favorite place. And with a few different people, we started there. I was with a few people, got doing one of the biggest peaks. And Candace often, and people often talk about it. She does a lot of out and backs. She has three out and backs that take you up to look at the amazing, amazing views. Lots of people are up there at nighttime. So we get up there, we can't see anything. But that's only a few of us. Obviously, there's lots of others that go up and it's daylight. But we sat up. You could sit up and you could feel where you are. You just couldn't see so much where you were.
Yeah.
And then when the second day, after that first climb, got into an aid station, and somebody who'd run Bigfoot said to me, my friend Tom said to me, it's always good to have a bit of a rest here because the climb that's coming up next. So I didn't have crew this time. So I didn't get to sleep in a van. So you sleep in the sleeping area. And everyone's chatting outside.
Yeah.
So if you're a really solid sleeper, you're probably okay.
Yes.
And then you tell someone if you want to, when you want to be woken up. So the whole time you're asleep, there's people coming by going, number 54, it's time for you to get up. Number 33, it's time. So about an hour later, I kind of got up, and I'd had maybe a minute. Lucky if it was that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't sort of too bad because we'd been going for less than 24 hours, so that was fine. And my plan was to sleep on the trail a bit as well, where it's quieter. That was difficult because it rained on that first day quite a lot, so that was kind of difficult.
So you would just normally just lay down on the side of the trail somewhere?
Yeah, well, not...
Would you use your blanket? Or like you've got a reasonable pack, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we do. So even though I had the emergency blanket, which would have been great, the bivvies that are over here, the bivvy sacks, I would always have a bivvy sack now. That's sort of something to learn. I don't know, they were here, I should have just bought one and gone. But and then it was, so from that moment on, from the first morning on, it was just, there was no sleep regime at all. We knew that we weren't going to have any. And my friend Adrian and I ran, we were in Tahoe together, and we ran lots of Bigfoot together. So we would have maybe, you just have minutes. Yeah. There was one point when he said, how are you going? I was in front of him and I said, yeah, you know, I'm a little bit tired, because everything in front of me was starting to swirl.
Just a bit tired.
Yeah, and he goes, because you're all over the track. And I went, all right. I said, let's just rest. So he just stopped and then had on and off sleep. And I said, how long was that? And he said, well, it's nearly 10 minutes. So.
Oh, wow.
All right, we got a few, and then we took off again.
Don't overdo it.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And 10 whole minutes.
Yeah, and then sometimes we would go off and be running, like really dragging ourselves along, barely moving. And somebody came past who we'd been at the previous aid station with, and some of these aid stations are like 31 kilometres apart, and they're mountain kilometres, like big, big distances. And he'd left a long, long time after us, and he was passing us, and we were like, what? I'm going really slow. This isn't great. And that was only for one section, and we just picked up. So we went from being absolutely knackered, shattered, exhausted to flying.
Feeling great.
It's amazing. It's a crazy sort of thing. And then we went through.
Is that your little rest or the food you're eating? Like what? What do you think?
It's making sure your food's good.
Yeah.
Making sure you've got some decent food inside of you. My friend Tom said to me at Tahoe, making sure you're getting your sleeping and your food. If you can check into that well, then you'll come good again. We didn't do the sleeping well. I did take a few no-dos, but the food and my hydration and nutrition and everything was really excellent. So you just felt like you could just get the energy. And a friend of mine was running a miler in New Zealand a couple of weeks later. And she was saying how hard it was getting. And I said, just stand up. And Adrian had me do this at Bigfoot. Stand up and sprint.
Sprint?
Just, I don't know, 10 metres, 20 metres. Just sprint. Click your body back into it again. Wake your body up. Just sprint.
It's a good idea. Give you a bit of a shot of adrenaline, really.
Yeah.
That's an interesting philosophy.
Adrian did it at the top. It was the top of the mountain, though, so it was a little bit kind of scary. And he said, will you do something? And I'm like... I don't know what it is. He goes, no, you got 100% tell me that you're going to do this. And I went, righto. So he goes, drop your pack. And he goes, I want you to sprint to that tree and back. And he goes, you can do it. And we went, we can actually kind of wake up. So we were kind of playing a few of these games. And at one point we went through a field.
And he's probably activating some of your fast twitch muscle fibers,
I think,
as
so.
Well.
Yeah, and you would know way more about that than me being a coach.
That's an interesting, I've never even thought of that, but that's really interesting.
Yeah, shake it up, do something sort of completely different. Yeah. Instead of just dragging, you sort of set along. Yeah, go faster. When you're tired, go faster.
Just briefly even.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's so much. And I guess from these really big, long races, it's amazing how well you can come good. We hear a lot about the elites doing it, that they get really tired and then they can speed up again.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for us sometimes to get our head around that in terms of how tired are they, how strong are they, what's the points of differences.
Yeah.
But for every person, you can come good again.
Yeah.
It's not the end of it. I think that's probably what I've learned from multi-stages, that you get up and you have to go again.
It seems like you've got to just, I think, I've learned, and you probably know this, you would definitely know this, is learning that the lows are just part of the process.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Like, yeah.
I mean, obviously there's times when you're like, maybe I need to stop for, you know, there could be something wrong, you know, but you learn to know when that is really happening.
Yeah.
But I mean, quite often it is just going, okay, this is just a stage in the, like this is part of, I'm going to come, eventually so something's going to change. Yeah. You don't know how it's going to change, but it'll change.
Yeah.
That's
so true, isn't it? And knowing that, and it was, and maybe stopping and having something to eat and just sort of resting. Mm. And I think that, and I talk about that this bit with Andy Dubai, and I think he was talking about that night in the store too.
Andy's, just to clarify, your coach?
Yeah.
Andy Dubois? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's the coach from
Mile 27.
Yeah, like very cool coach.
And
he did a talk here at the shop, and you were saying
because I can run. I used to run sometimes because I'm always pretty high.
Yeah,
so I'll always be the one out there smiling and happy no matter what. Like I'm always happy, and it is my happy place.
Great.
And I don't know how people can not be happy out there, even if you're hurting. Man, we're out there doing, we're having fun, and always volunteers that are doing stuff for anyway. But then, so if I'm always high, and if I'm not feeling high, or if I'm feeling low, which I don't often feel low, but I might be feeling a little bit negative, I was saying to having a chat with Andy about this before I went, is actually not feeling anything. And I've said that to my friend too when she was in doing her miler, that just don't feel anything. Don't feel high or low. Don't mess around with your brain like that. Just don't feel, just move.
Yeah.
Just keep moving without putting all this emotional sort of stuff in it. I'm either great or I'm not great. Well, it's actually, you don't have to be either.
You just got to do.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, as much, whether you like or hate the brand, Nike's slogan is one of the best slogans around, you know. We've all had those runs. The other night I wanted to get out and go for a run, and it was by the time I put my own kids to bed, you know, it was after 8 o'clock, and I didn't want to go out and had to do 10k's. All I wanted to do is go to bed, so it was a big end of a big day. I was like, no, I'm just going to do it. So I put my gear on, you know, and I went out and did my 10Ks, and I felt tired.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just one of those, all I wanted to do is curl up and watch a bit of Netflix, you know, on those nights. And like, but you know, yes, it was
definitely.
Like, got the run in and I did it. And I felt better for it. And I slept, I slept like a log that night.
Yeah, and I guess that when you do that, you finish that then, don't you? It's not like the next day. Are you a little step behind? Like when do you catch that up? And do you think that that's maybe something that what drives a lot of us is not, there is that determination, but we are well aware that if we don't stick to it, we're going to have to play catch up. And catch up is so much harder.
Yeah.
Mental catch up as well is so much harder than just get it, just Nike. Well, just do it.
Just do it. It stresses you out. I mean, sometimes, and you don't want to be carrying stress. Like, so you think, I'm just going to go out and run five. I don't have time or the energy to do 10 kilometres. I'm going to run 5 kilometres.
Yeah.
It's better than no kilometres.
Definitely. I couldn't agree with you more.
And some days, and it could come down to, you know, you're just not feeling it. And like, I'll sometimes just go, look, I can't find my running shorts. They're all in the wash. I might just stay home. But now I'm at a point where I was like, you know what? I'll wear any shorts out. Like, I'll just I'll put my board shorts on.
Yeah,
and go,
nice. That's awesome.
I mean, if it's, obviously it's on a big long run, I want to be proper prepared.
Yeah.
But if one of those runs where I'm just getting the runs that I need to get in, I'll do it in whatever. I'll go out and run in a like especially if I'm running at night, I don't care what I look like. As long as, you know, so it's funny. Like we, and I think that's something that I've learned as I've gotten older, a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I value, especially with children, as you would know, valuing time.
Yeah.
My time.
Yeah.
To myself is really important, is because you spend so much time giving to your children. You
yeah.
know, and I, so when I do get that opportunity to go out for my run.
Yeah, it's everything.
Got to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everything, isn't it? It's special. We, yeah, we define it. In a really, really personal and sincere way, that yeah. time that we have to ourselves. We respect that time
and
that we have
you,
to ourselves.
Exactly. It's so important. Like, and you've with your running, because you have a child, a daughter?
I've got two. Two that are now 19 and 20.
Yeah.
So there was years where as a single parent, I couldn't. So I couldn't run. I couldn't go outside and run because they were too little. So I had a running machine, and I put it in the living room, and just got up every morning and just ran 10Ks on this running machine every morning until they were old enough for me to go out really, really early.
The treadmill.
But I loved it though, because it meant I was still running.
Yeah.
But and also, yeah, like we said, that I think that the most important thing, my role was the most important thing, was to nurture these two humans, to make them really good humans and really good contributors in our communities and society. So that was more important than kind of anything. There was times that I would go outside and jump on I don't know how I got one, but one of those little, you know, those round little bouncy things you bounce on? I don't know if you have them anymore.
The little trampolines.
Yeah, little trampolines.
Yeah.
I would jump on that to try and do stuff, or get a skipping rope. I'll do something to try and keep fit, but without having to sort of leave the house.
No, you do what you got to do. I'm not going to lie. I've done runs in, I don't own a treadmill. I've run around my backyard. I've done five Ks in my backyard before.
Yeah,
and like
nice.
Just running around in circles.
Yeah, that's so doable.
You know, kids are in bed. Just got to, like, seriously, like, if you want to do it, you'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I say to the people I coach. It's like, you know, there's always a way. You know, there's enough. I'm so busy, you know. So everyone's busy.
You just get up a little bit earlier.
Anyway.
Unless they're really little, I get that. If you can't, if it's.
But you've made it work. You made it work somehow. Trampoline or, I mean, skipping is actually a really great exercise.
Yeah.
And
did I know then? Yeah.
Yeah. So good for strengthening your tendons.
Yeah.
And like, it's really good for core strength.
Yeah. I said to a friend of mine who was finding it hard to find her mojo, and her daughter, she's a doctor, so her hours are really big. She's a specialist, actually, and her daughter's little. And she was trying to find her mojo, and I said, just go outside to, I don't know where, she's moved house now, but there was a small lane. I said, go outside with the baby monitor.
Yeah.
And just do 100 steps that way and 100 steps this way. Sprint, 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 sprint. Just get your body alive, and you're right next to your house, because that, even those movements and what's happening to your body, your endorphins start, and then your mojo starts coming back. And of course, you can't go further unless she works that out with who's looking after her daughter or if her partner's at home. But it's a start, right? Rather than just when she's asleep. I said to her, even if it's 10 minutes.
It's better than no minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that's great.
And the endorphins, just crave the endorphins.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, the endorphins thing, and my wife told me about this. My wife works, she's a nurse, but I've read, there's a study that came out not too long ago about that runner's high is actually got more to do with the cannabinoid receptors in our brain than it does with endorphins. As in, the same high that pot smokers get when they smoke weed, we get it to a far more mild degree when we run. It's activating the exact same receptors. And,
oh, wow.
So there you go.
That's amazing. I had sort of no idea. There was somebody smoking pot at Bigfoot, I think.
Oh, you know.
Yeah,
in America,
but that would have been, I would have been snoozing just because I just would have been so tired.
That's the last thing you want in a race.
Yeah,
you know,
that looks so comfy, that mound of grass. and then I wake up and it's Thursday.
Yeah. So take us back to your race, the Bigfoot race. That's really fascinating insight into the getting moving. And so you've been a few days of running.
Yeah.
So were there any real low points?
No, I don't ever get to low points ever. I don't know. I guess I'm a realist, I guess. I know that everything out there, I know I've chosen to be out there. I know how special it is. I'd spent months and months and months thinking about Bigfoot, so I didn't want to get into Bigfoot and have it over.
Yeah.
Because then it's, well, then it's over. Like, I wanted to be in it for as long as I kind of could be in it.
Value for money.
Yeah,
that's it.
Definitely. Yeah. And I guess the low points, the difficult points, and I found this with Tahoe as well, but not only at Bigfoot towards the end, is that in Bigfoot, I worked on kilometres.
Yes.
And in Tahoe, I worked on miles. And then I told all the Americans, you guys have got to convert to kilometres because it's so much better for your brain. Like, miles take ages to get through.
They do.
Kilometres, you can just click them off. Like, they're brilliant. Like I said, you've got to work kilometres. And they kind of started to agree with me. But it's when you think that you've got
you're getting that positive reinforcement on your watch every kilometre.
Definitely. And I don't really use my watch out there. So I didn't, but I can tell, I can feel kilometres, so I knew what was kind of coming. Yeah, definitely, I knew when I was supposed to be somewhere. The last 20, 30, 40 Ks, I put my watch on to start sort of counting it down. I knew I was going to do that. I thought I was going to do it for the last 20. But when you get down to the last 80 or 60, your brain, because of the amount you've gone, your brain's telling you you're finished, you're almost there.
Yeah.
But you're still like 80 mountain miles. K, 60 Ks or something to go.
Still so it's a long way.
Yeah, so that kind of messes with my head a bit. The last 20 kilometres of Bigfoot is on the road, so you're running into the town. So that messes with your head a bit because you keep thinking it's just there or I'm in a car, I'm going to go faster. But I would have to say that even though...
Your leg turnover would be slightly faster though.
And that made it so much easier. Oh, yeah. Actually, sorry, the first 20 Ks is... No, the first, say, maybe 6 or 8 Ks is on an awesome downhill switch. Back. Oh, it's not really sort of a switchback. So that was fun. That was on a dirt road, and then we got onto the bitumen, onto the actual where lots of cars. Oh, a few cars. But if I had to either choose that or a really difficult trail that had lots and lots of rocks or like lots more logs to climb over, this was much easier. Like we're just running.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's an interesting.
And then some guy came past. There was a guy coming up behind us, and I said to my friend Adrian, "Let's." We can't let him beat us. And that's not how you think at all, but I was kind of, my friend was finding it sort of difficult on the road, and I thought, now let's get some momentum going. If we're actually trying to beat someone, it motivates you to move yourself faster. Of course, we didn't care at all if this person passed us. So running along, and this headlamp came up behind us, and I thought, well, they must be coming faster, but it wasn't them, it was some other dude. Oh. He flew past us and then absolutely disappeared. We couldn't see his headlight anywhere.
He was in the race.
Yep, we think he was in the race, because we do a lap of the school to get to the finish line.
Yeah.
And apparently he was doing maybe a 3-minute something Ks or something around the finish line.
Whoa.
And I was like, where did he come from? Like, how was he running that fast? And we've never seen him in this race before. And somebody said, I'm sure somebody said he's a road runner. And I went, but why does that matter? Like, he didn't swap over his road running legs.
I know, get a new set of legs. That's amazing.
That was pretty amazing.
He was holding back for so long.
Holding back, he knew this bit was coming.
Yeah, he's going to win the race in that last 20 kilometres.
And maybe it comes back to that same point we were bringing up before, that even though he was tired and fatigued, that you can actually speed up.
Yeah.
It's easier to speed up. Walking was really hard and running was much easier. And maybe the sprinting part was... going faster is easier.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, that is really interesting in that kind of... in that context, going faster is easier.
Yeah.
I think... my training, I always... And people that I coach is... I give them... I want them to train at every speed.
Yeah, and
so
nice.
Obviously, the longer the run, you want to do lots of long, slow running. But it's important to... have your body used to training, running at every different type of speed. So your muscles know how to work in every conceivable way. So you can give your muscles a bit of a rest, you know.
Yeah,
so it might be
definitely.
Running faster, running in your high end, you know.
Yeah.
Just for a few minutes even, like, or...
Yeah,
or
it doesn't have to be long. Yeah, most definitely.
That's fascinating. That's really amazing. I remember, this is a bit of a change, the first time we met, do you remember the first time we met? You probably don't.
Was it on a switchback?
No, it was coming up. No, it was during the Hubert 100 last year. You were it was, you were in the closing stages leading the 100 mile.
Oh, you were coming down the escarpment.
I was coming down.
That's where we met, because you were with...
Hayley Teal.
Yeah.
And we, and it was sort of like, we knew that you were in front, because the 100 miler, you guys had started the day before. We were only 2 hours into our 100K, and we were coming down, and we saw you coming up, and you had this big smile on your face, and I think none of us really knew you at that point.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, it was such a highlight for us, and it gave us something to talk about for the next couple of hours.
That was one of my favorite times in a race, was that bit on the escarpment. I mean, I'd had a great run. I loved it out there. It was really, really beautiful, and knowing that you were in the front is a really great feeling.
Yeah.
But to the aside, coming up,
and you had to pass all the other runners, didn't you?
Well, and you guys were coming down, yeah. And we were all meeting and talking on this beautiful piece of escarpment.
It was amazing.
Like, almost like sunrise. And it was...
Yeah.
And we were all... You guys were all happy. I could feel how happy you were to see me, but I could also feel how happy you guys were in your race.
Yeah.
And I was happy. It was just... the whole escarpment was, like, beaming with joy.
It was beautiful. And you're on the side of St. Mary's Peak, on the edge of this ancient rock formation, the Wilpena Pound, and like there was a real sense of, like, I don't know, I love this feeling in trail races that I get, and I had it in that race a lot, is that sense of my place on the planet. Like, I felt like I was just this little dot on the planet, and I could almost feel like I could have these out of body experience, especially later in the race. I feel like I can see myself from space, like if I was on looking down on Google
really
Maps.
Cool.
I love that feeling.
Yeah.
That I'm not just like on a street in a town or in a house. I'm on the side of a mountain that people have been...
That's so superb.
Yeah, and it was great. And like, you know, we saw you, and then you probably all the way to the finish, you got to see all the 100K runners.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, get a whole heap of high fives to push you that last 10Ks or so. That would have been amazing. And like, and that was a really good day that weekend, because it was 100 mile for the Hubert 100, and it was also the 100K. It was the first time they had run either of those races. And I was doing the 100K, and so you finished first in the 100 mile, as in first outright, and then, which is fantastic. And so, not sure how, I think you might have been a couple of hours ahead of the second place runner, which was, I can't remember, it was a man.
Yeah,
it was,
I think
a man.
It was 1 hour 45 or something.
And then the 100K was taken out by Hayley Teal.
Yeah.
So it was a great day for women in running.
Yeah, Hayley's awesome.
I came second to Hayley, which I was happy to. I was only 13 minutes behind her, but it was one of those races, we ran together.
Oh, nice.
We ran together for quite a long time. There was a few of us, and we chatted for probably the first 35 Ks.
Nice.
It was like going on a Sunday long run.
That's so nice.
And then we sort of, all of a sudden, the conversation sort of stopped, and we started to stretch out. And I took off for a while. And I knew how strong Hayley Teal is as a runner.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I can keep her behind me as long as possible, I'll be stoked. And but sure enough, I think my leg speed was quicker than hers, but she just has the ability just to keep pushing the same speed.
Yeah.
You know, like, whereas I was a little bit small stop start, and, you know.
Women are really good at that consistency. Women will just, you'll often find guys will often drop in behind you.
Yeah.
Because they've been a bit, some all over the place, and they can see that you're just consistent, and they'll just drop in just to grab your momentum.
Yeah.
And then we run differently. I think that
absolutely. And I think women run with less ego than men. And
we pace it out from the beginning. We know we've got our whole race worked out in our heads before we start.
That particular race, I fell into the trap of going, you know, it was that 50 something Ks in, and I was in front, and I was like, you know, just got to hold it together for another 40 odd kilometers. And even though deep down I knew that I couldn't hold her, you know, but I thought, I'm going to do the best I can.
There was a possibility.
A couple of times she caught up to me and then left me. And then we were cat and mouse for a while.
Yeah.
I caught up to her. And then with about maybe 30 Ks to go, I think I lost her. And then I came across some hikers, and I said, did a woman just come through here? And they go, she just came through like 5 minutes ago. And I was like, I wonder if it's like their version of 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, 5 minutes ago, 5 Ks.
Or is it actual 5 minutes?
Yeah.
You know? But and so and you wouldn't know, and it wasn't, and then it got dark, and I thought, I can't see her head torch.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see any head torches behind me, thankfully. And that's the worst feeling, is when you look back and you see a head torch coming up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And and then the 100K, we had to run into the campground, but then we luckily didn't have to go over the mountain again.
Yeah.
We just ran, did a 1K lap around the campground.
Ah, yes. Okay, yep, I know where you were.
But as I came into the campground, I heard the crowd cheering and I heard her finish.
Ah.
And so she was only about a kilometre ahead of me, but that last kilometre took me like 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I was dead, but also my head torch was dying and I couldn't see the ground. And it just was like, I was sort of staggering a little bit.
I lost my head torch on that run too.
But
ran in the dark for a while.
But it's just amazing. And something I mentioned to you yesterday about, you know, the whole concept of, and I mean, when I finished, I was so proud. I was like, yes,
yeah, you did amazing.
First man, it was one of my best runs to date. And the first thing some of the guys said to me as I was coming in, a guy, I forget who it was, he's one of the runners, you know, he's everything, he'd done the 50, and he comes out and he goes, oh, I've got some bad news for you, Daniel. He ran the last sort of 100 meters with me, and he goes, oh, you've just been chicked.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, here's my great moment.
Yeah, that's some
and I'm
tosser
like,
is just...
I know, you're like, you're shitting on my performance and you're shitting on her performance.
Yeah, and you're shitting on everyone with those kind of shitty comments.
I mean, I was stoked. I come across the finish line. I had my wife and my children waiting for me.
Yeah.
And it was like, and because there were no updates from the course, my wife didn't realise how well I'd done. And she was shocked to see me come in. And
yeah, an beautiful. Amazing moment
and then,
for her.
But that whole concept of getting chicked, I resent it. And I know it's a really, I'm bringing it up as a, I think it's not good for me. I wish it would die out of the sport. I think ultra running is one of those sports that it deserves, that the playing field is much more level.
Yeah,
it should be more level.
Yeah, I think there's way, way bigger, more exciting, interesting things to be thinking about over there when you reduce it to things like that.
Yeah.
It's really grubby and it belongs somewhere else. Like maybe take that to the, you know, football field or where that kind of mentality is. It doesn't belong in here. And I would have to say from travelling a lot around the world running, and spending a lot of time in America or where some of the top athletes are running, that kind of attitude is just, that's a bygone era. People aren't doing it. People are watching men and women be brilliant regardless of...
Exactly.
Yeah, we do look at, I mean, we look at Courtney DeWalter and say, like, that was phenomenal what she did. And because she is phenomenal, but no one is going to say... you've got chicked by Courtney DeWalter. You came second to Courtney DeWalter. She's just she's an entity now. But so yeah, that's really sort of unfortunate. And I guess there's a lot of sort of commentary out there at the moment, which sometimes it's a concern because some people just want to be a point of difference. Some people just want their ideas sort of put out to them out there into social media. So that's unfortunate. But at the same time, it often doesn't get many wings. It doesn't go very far. But the thought that we need to get more women into the really big races, which I would have to say, if women want to go into really big races, they just will.
You don't want that that leg up.
No, somebody was saying we should get double points into a lottery system. And I think most women, I would hope, if there was any races where you got special treatment because you were a woman, you would actually avoid those races. I mean, I don't understand how they work. Let's just do a natural progression of how things happen.
Yeah.
We know what a great sport this is. It's so wonderful. There's no money in it. We do it because we love it. So we don't actually need to contrive it into... the silly things that happen in maybe other areas of life that actually seem at the moment to be good ideas, but long-term effect is often not so great. So women will get that. Like, women will be in these races when they want to, but also we know that there are such a massive increase in women trail running at times when they choose to become or not trail runners or mountain climbers or mountain bikers or expedition people. Like, there's a bunch of different things that
I think I definitely think do. Women, I mean, have a genetic advantage in endurance events.
I think
you could say men are stronger, but I think, you know, whether it's through the child, the ability, you know, that women have to have childbirth, have that, there's some inbuilt thing in
Survival.
Survival,
I think so too. I think there is some writings of the longer the distance, the gap between men and women starts, that it gets shorter and smaller and smaller the longer the distance. And that makes sense, and that would be based on statistics, not just people's opinion.
Well, exactly, and that's what really matters, is the numbers. Statistics, like people, there's a lot of opinionated people out there. There was a study done on Western states about the, how would you call it, like the women actually completing, there's a higher completion rate of women in Western states than men. So more male DNFs than women, you know?
Isn't that interesting? I think that, and I don't know, and I don't do into study of anything like that. I know for myself, because of there were so many years that I couldn't go on adventures or do anything because I was nurturing my children, bringing my children up. So I couldn't. So when I was able to, I wasn't going to let go of them. And also because of the amount of time I spent away from my children and the money that I was spending on myself, there was no way that I was coming home without finishing it. And completing it. I'd set on a task and I was going to complete it. And I think that's when people start getting down to that determination and the drawing up of grit to say that I'm. It doesn't matter whether you're natural at it or not, but when you draw up on that grit and just keep going till you don't stop, I think women do have,
like you say,
much of that.
Absolutely. And childbirth is a good example.
Yeah.
There's no backing out.
There's no backing out, you can't DNF that stuff. Well, I know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know exactly
in
what you mean.
In all the positive kind of ways,
No, there's nothing more, well, as a husband, and I've been there for all three of my children's births.
Yeah.
Watching my wife give birth was the most, it was terrifying but amazing and just like,
yes, it must be amazing to watch how empowered and strong that she was.
Yeah, just so, so hard, you know, like, and she didn't, she just got so focused. And to be honest, like, I did everything I could to help, but she, it wouldn't have mattered if I was on fire. If I was literally in flames, she wouldn't have noticed that I was there. Because at the end of the day, it was all her.
You
know? I mean, I especially my son, who's only 1 year old now, I actually delivered him, and which was really cool.
Nice.
Which is, I wanted to be as involved. But even then, she probably could have done that herself, you know. And so, I think I've got two daughters, and I sort of think, as a male in the sport, and, you know, the sport I'm so passionate about, whether or not they go into it, you know, or whatever they decide to do in their life, I think I just want to be... Like, I guess I and I say this, and people can say whatever they want about me, but I just want to be an advocate for these young up and coming women, and, you know, like, because that's, I've got a vested interest. I care about,
it's exciting, isn't it?
I care about what happens to my daughters and my daughters in the future, and I care about how my son is going to treat daughters.
Yeah,
in the future,
most definitely. I feel very much the same way.
Yeah, it's really important that you know, he can still be a strong man and not feel emasculated by being beaten by a woman. You know, it's not, when I going back to that race in the Hubert 100, I got beaten by a really good athlete as opposed to I got kicked.
Absolutely.
So that's sort of the attitude I like to take. And, you know, anytime I hear, it is becoming more, like, people get a bit more used to, a woman won. No big deal. Like, it's great. You know, like, I like it when it's not emphasized too much. Like, it's just like, okay, first place was Courtney DeWalter or someone.
Yeah.
You know, when it's not overly, oh my goodness, a woman beat a man? You know?
Yeah, like, and I think one of my favorite things, the pictures I saw, if people could just Google it, but it was the Eiger, and Mick Kite had run the Eiger this year, and a picture came up, I think, on Facebook or somewhere. It's an awesome, awesome picture. I did post it, I think, on my of the podium, and the first, second, third man are up there, and the first, second, third woman are up there together.
Yeah.
And they're beaming. They're all beaming. So they're all, was a big enough podium to fit it, and I thought, that's one of the best podiums I've ever seen. We can't tell by looking at it, that was a pretty awesome sort of podium. And I think that those people that make those pissy comments probably make pissy comments a lot in their life about a lot of things, because that's just how their brains are kind of working, or thinking that because it really, they're actually trying to rain on people's parade.
Yeah.
Which is that's a pissy thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is one sport, and you know, I think that, and that's why I think you hope that there's a ripple effect into other parts of society when there's a shift in attitude. Amazingly, like, women weren't even allowed to compete in the marathon.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
The first women's Olympic marathon was in 1984.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Women, and there's that famous footage of that female runner coming in all wobbly. Yeah. And then people say, see, women can't run marathons. That was one woman out of all the women, and it was a ridiculously hot year, you know.
And she raced it,
she hit the wall hard, but you know, like.
But wasn't it in the hydration, nutrition, and everything was different back in those days
So much less was understood.
Probably running in Dunlops. And
yeah, I know, it's amazing. Was it the first Boston Marathon? Catherine Switzer?
Yes.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, isn't it? Really amazing sort of story. And I mean, I'd have to say, I think that all the goodness in the sport is really the place that everyone should gravitate towards. There's beautiful thinkers out there. I mean, like all of you crew that are doing podcasts sort of around the world as well, like there's really good thought in those podcasts. There's clever thought
it's cool
in the stories that people are telling, I think that will end up taking over stuff just gets sifted out a little bit,
maybe. I hope so, and it's part of the reasons it's a good environment to be around. I like being around runners and taught, you know, if you want to feel good about humanity, stand at the finish line of an ultra marathon.
Yes.
That's what I always say.
I do too. I just wrote that in my write-up. Was it exactly that, Daniel? I said, this is where I love that love about humanity. The same thing. Yeah, me too. I definitely felt at Bigfoot there was no male, female stuff. Yeah. And maybe that was, maybe that's, you know, maybe Courtney led that way. As soon as she won Moab by 10 hours.
So long.
That just, maybe that opens up anybody that's in the 200s, and then obviously that just goes into all different kind of races. I don't know if we kind of realize now how much that's probably changed things. People, it's when men and women are running together, and whether and who's coming first, whether it's a male or female, we don't think so much of it anymore.
No.
It's like the Courtney factor.
Yeah.
The Dwelter factor. Like, she's just opened it up. That's so great. You definitely don't feel it.
No, she's
I didn't.
Cool.
I mean, I didn't feel it at Tahoe either. But there's not. You don't get a lot of ego at these 200s. But people were. You don't feel it. You don't. When you're running with guys or.
Yeah.
You don't feel it at all. But surprisingly, Bigfoot was the first time. At one point, I think I was running with about 3 or 4 different women. And I've never done that before. I've always sort of been. Maybe one woman, but I'd often be around guys. So that was pretty. So when people are saying that, getting more women in ultras, I was around 4 or 5 women.
That's really cool.
Yeah, within about 6-hour, 8-hour period.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's women in front and women behind, and I haven't seen a guy for ages. And this is like we were running it in a decent position. That was pretty cool.
That is really cool. Yeah. No, that's such an amazing thing. So you've done all those 200s. As far as 200s go, you've done 2 of them, have you?
I've done Tahoe and Bigfoot.
Yeah, and you've done quite a few hundreds as well, 100 miles?
I've done Western States, Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, or UTMB, and the Hubert, and I'm not quite sure if I've done any others.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty.
Not sure.
You've done some pretty big ones then already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's next? I'd love to. I could sit here for like 4 hours.
Yeah, me too.
And ask you about all those different races, and maybe I have to talk to you again soon. But like, what would be on? What have you got anything on the horizon?
I think I do have a bit of a plan. I think that maybe there's Moab, so I'm working out whether that's this year or next year. Which there's a little fire burning inside of me.
What time of year is it? When is it?
Next month.
Oh God. Living the dream. Just go and run, you know.
Yeah.
Go back over to the States.
Yeah. I mean, it's the logistics that's the hardest part. If it wasn't the logistics, I think I would definitely be there and do it. So there's Moab is either definitely this year or next year. And then, I don't know, maybe a couple of Australian races. And then looking abroad, maybe Tour de France would be great. But then I also...
That's only 330 kilometres, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've done that before, that distance.
Yeah, the elevations I think is a bit nuts, but I really love being in these really long distance ones. Oh. And I must really stress, it's not about the distance for me at all. It's not to say...
You just like to be in the races for a long time.
It's the in it. Yeah. The in it that I get to a spot that I am at my happiest place, and the distance is what gets me there. So it's got nothing to actually do with the actual kilometres, and I really hope that people...
It's such a good attitude.
Don't focus on the distance.
I've done this before, and I know a lot of people do this, and they go, "Oh, I just can't wait till this is over." Oh,
yeah.
And it's the real emphasis on the finish. Finishing is great, but I think the sooner you embrace the middle part of a race,
the
meat in the sandwich, then you really get into what the sport is about.
Yeah,
you
know? Sandwich is a really good analogy because it's the inside of the sandwich which is the best part.
Yeah,
the anticipation of a race is good, the finish is great, but it's the inside that's the most important thing.
Otherwise, what are you
doing?
And I've been in races, especially early on, where I just couldn't wait for it to be over, you know? And I just wanted, just counting down the kilometres to get it done. And
why am I running for? Why am I doing? I don't like running. I need to get another hobby. This is the last race I'm ever going to do. I'm going to rethink this.
I've quit running so many times. In the latter part of an ultra. I'm not even doing park run ever. Nothing. I'm going to just sit on my butt and watch TV.
I'm going to do something else.
But then
now.
Usually within about a week, I'm signing up for the next race or thinking about the next race.
And it's not... Yeah. It's not that finish line that makes you want to sign up again. It's getting through the hardest part of a race that makes you want to go back.
Absolutely.
That you're actually attracted to the hard part.
Mm. Yeah.
If it's not hard, then there's not really...
That's such a good point. Yeah, and if it was hard, everyone would do it. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
Going into that low place, if there is a low place, and finding your way out of it. And I also like the aspect of, how can I, there's so many ways, I like to run faster sometimes, and I think, how can I streamline this performance? What could I have done a little bit better? You know, could I have got my nutrition a bit better? And obviously nutrition and hydration is so important in these and that will make or break a race, you know? And I look back at races and I think, that was awesome, but I could have probably done it 10% faster.
Yeah.
You know, because I spent too long at these aid stations, or I didn't eat enough at this point.
Yeah, I started daydreaming a bit and slowed down.
But that's part of the fun of the sport too. I enjoy that aspect of it. And so,
Yeah, if we get rid of this need to always, the ego sort of part of it, and I know that that gets talked about a lot. Absolutely like going out. And I think that when you listen to lots of the elites and they go into a race knowing they want to win, they're competing. Yeah, but they're not... They're going in, it's them. They're going in for them. Whereas I think that some other people may be trying to compete against the person next to you, which they're out to win. And I'm not really explaining that very well, but they're all that's going on in their head is themselves. Yeah. They're not thinking about the other people. They're thinking about staying in front and themselves.
And so you're saying that's a good thing or?
Well, it's not. I think only thinking of yourself is a good thing. Don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Like they've come to that race and from a whole different circumstances, you walk away, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just run your best race.
Run your race, That's a really lovely place to get to.
I think that UTMB this year was a really good example.
Amazingly so, hey.
There were a lot of people who didn't run their own race and were racing each other. Like Zach Miller, all these top end runners.
Yeah.
And they all, I mean, conditions were hard and it's a hard race. And I do feel like Jim Walmsley, there was quite a few that just DNF'd.
Oh, yeah, Tim Tofferson.
I think I heard one of the interviews with one of the guys that came in the top three, and he said, I could see that they were going out way too fast. They were racing.
Like they were racing, like they were in the OCC or the CCC, out fast.
Not realising that, you know, you might get to 100 kilometres and you've still got 60 miles, 60 kilometres to go, and it's all mountainous. And even though these are incredible athletes.
Yeah, wonderful, beautiful. I mean, I love watching Zach Miller. He's an awesome runner to watch. Some of the footage of him is just so brilliant.
Yeah.
But and then you look at Andrew Hoff, and that we couldn't see him, but we could feel him, and we know him, and we spoke about that yesterday. He approached that race the same that Mick did and the Iger. They approached that race doing like all of them and the top elites were doing and brilliant training. They were wonderful for training, but those Andrew and Mick approached their races.
They're very methodical.
Absolutely methodical, as hard as they could, knowing what their capabilities were.
Yeah, and I just thought, like, Andrew's race, knowing his how he trains, and like I cross paths with him so often on the trails, and like just, you know, he's fast, hands down. But it's not just that. He had a plan and he stuck to the plan.
And he's got a good, you know, good coach. Yeah, so much respect for that.
Yeah, and because it is so easy, people just throw their plan out the window when. So, and like I always say to my runners, there's only so much you can control in a race.
Yeah.
You can control what you do. You can control what you drink and eat and how fast you run, but you can't control the weather. You can be prepared for it.
Yeah.
But like, and so I always say it's better to be ready to, like I think of the race as like a river. You can either jump in the river and let it sweep you along and just see what happens, and quite often you get too caught up in it and you bomb out. Or you learn how to doggy paddle and you just doggy paddle, and like you learn you sort of take some sort of control of the things that you can control.
Yeah.
You can't control everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's what Andy Hoff did. He's just got such, and he's so humble. He's got every reason to be arrogant, but he has not a shred of arrogance on him.
Yeah, he's like the loveliest person.
And his beautiful family, his wife and his daughter, and they're all there, and that there's that lovely video.
Yeah.
Him coming in, and he sees them, and he's like, he just face lights up.
Yeah,
and
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was really nice. I got a bit teary because I was following it online. I was like, oh, and I was watching him move up the places all through the day and night. He was in about 130th at one point, just ticked his way through. You know, you could tell he was just waiting,
Absolutely. Really. And it's so nice for our community here to feel that, to have gone on that with him.
Everyone could feel
how sensible he was. And I guess that's because, like we were saying yesterday, we know him, but to know what a strong, sensible. And when we say sensible, we don't mean like, we mean sensible in terms of he was evaluating everything really clever in his head.
Yeah.
He was processing it. Yeah.
And like to finish in the top 100 of a race like UTMB.
Yeah.
I mean, that puts him as one of the best runners in the world.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, I feel like I met him a few years ago during his first Eurobilla. And I think he did it in about 6 or something hours, which is quick to us mere mortals. Like, I haven't even broken 6 hours myself. And he won Eurobilla last year in under 5 hours.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but even then, way back, you know, just a couple of years ago, he was just cool as, and he hasn't changed. Like, so, you know, got a man crush on him. I love him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
It's a shame,
I think everybody does.
Yeah, no, it's good. But I think, you know, now he's having a year off to travel the world with his family.
Yeah, I know. He's living the van life. That's so great. Yeah. I did say to him, I sent him a message going, if you're in Italy, if I come over for 2TG, it'd be great to catch up. And my brain wasn't equating that he would be long gone by then.
I was just thinking
everything was happening in his vacuum.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well. If you don't know who Andrew Hoff is, I suggest you look him up on Facebook or look up on Strava and follow. He's very active on Strava.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot from an athlete by the way they train on Strava. It doesn't mean you can train exactly like them, but you can still learn.
Well, I think that your point is the most important point for that he had a plan, he stuck to it. Now, I reckon that's one of the most important things. And we can deviate. We can do lots of other stuff and deviate, but he stuck to that plan.
You've got to be adaptable. But you definitely have to have plans.
Which is, you do that to yourself. We're all really, really important people in our, you know, we're important.
Yeah.
So if you're important, then stick to your plan.
That's it. But yeah, I mean, like I use the attitude, like in an ultra, I treat it like it's like climbing a Mount Everest or something. No one stands at the bottom of Mount Everest and goes, gee, I wonder if I'm going to get to the top. I mean, there's a very good chance they might not get to the top.
Yeah,
but you've got to be certain. You've got to have absolute certainty in your mind as well that you're going. You've got to. I mean, even lie to yourself almost.
Yeah.
And like my philosophy for running, and you, because you're so positive and happy when you run, I use the term aggressively optimistic.
Yeah.
But when I'm in a race, I'm a bit the same. I'm throwing out high fives left and right.
Yeah.
And the more experienced I get, the more I realize how important that is for me for my success. And like just, I notice the surroundings, notice the other runners. Oh, look at that old tree. You know, that tree is amazing. Oh, look, I love this bit of trail, you know? You got to choose to it. You choose to do it. Seriously, it makes my life better.
Yeah.
You know? When I'm running, I'm a much happier person. And it's so fascinating, like the way we can sort of rewire our brains to be happier. By telling yourself that you're happier, you know?
Yeah,
those low points, I mean, you see, you're going to get them, just ride it out. Just ride that wave until you come back up to the top of it, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. And I guess that really good point there for people is to when they are running in races or looking at different distances, to be doing it only for themselves. If they're doing it to prove it to someone else or to compete against someone else, or to get your sugar hit on social media, it will be a sugar hit. You've got to find something deeper than that. It's got to be more. It can't be to everyone's running now, so you're not going to stand out for it.
Yeah.
But only, I mean, sometimes I've taken some people out that I kind of get into a 5K maybe once a week, and all they're thinking of is really big distances or wanting to be really great, and like getting to a point that they haven't.
You're nowhere near.
Yeah, they're not near. Now just start small, because this is your journey, and we all want to be. If we're all going to live to 100, we want to be running to where 100.
Yeah,
so you've got to have that in mind. Don't make it all happen so quick. Don't if you make that journey happen too quick, then
you hurt yourself.
Yeah, you hurt yourself, and it's kind of then it's all over.
Yeah,
then you've got to fill it in with
and you
something
might enjoy
else.
It. It does. The more races I do, like I remember the first race I did was I did the Sydney Marathon, and I thought I'll do this marathon. And then I'll hang up my running shoes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Running anything more than a marathon is ridiculous. You couldn't possibly run.
Yeah, why? Because it's humongous.
I know. Yeah. And then literally within, a year later, I ran Urabilla. And then it was, I've run more ultras than I've run, a lot more ultras than I've run marathons.
Yeah.
I've actually only ever done two road marathons. I should do another marathon one day.
I've done, only about four. But like we said, I love the marathon. It's a
good sport.
Yeah, it's really, really special. The only thing I would say about the marathon, I ran Paris Marathon, and my only regret was racing it.
Yeah.
If I run any more international ones,
you'd absorb it.
I'll absorb it.
Yeah.
The time wouldn't matter. You'd still run well, but I'd be looking at things.
Oh yeah, and like I'd love to do something like some of the bigger ones too. Like if I was going to do another marathon, I'd go and do, Tokyo.
Which
is really hard to get into.
I was in it 1 year, but I had a stress fracture.
I have a friend that lives in, because I used to live in Japan years ago, and a friend of mine, he's done it a number of times. He's qualified for it, and now he's like a sub 230 marathon runner.
Wow,
so he's fast.
Yeah, that's
so
fast.
I think he, his first time he did it, he only just broke 3 hours, and he was, because he comes from a cycling background, and yeah, you've got to do it. The lottery is crazy for it, though.
But you can go through Travelling Fit. Travelling Fit's got Tokyo Marathon on their list.
Really?
So you just, you just pay a fee with them and you can, most of them, actually.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's lots on the list now. So, so you're possibly going to be going over maybe to another race next month.
Yeah. I'll work it out in the next.
I'll hide in your suitcase. I wish. I not there yet. Maybe in a couple of years. I'll have to got family commitments, which I love.
Yeah.
But it's just I do get a little bit of the FOMO, fear of missing out on all these. It's just. Yeah, it's fun. There's so many exciting races now. Just adventures.
Picking the country or the runs that mean something to you.
It's really cool. we might have to. I think I've hit all the questions I wanted to hit with you. We could talk for hours.
We could talk all day.
Yes, but I have. I'm going to sneak off for a run before I have to go and pick up my kids.
Nice.
And so
nice.
So I've got my. Luckily, I've got my parents in town. Anyway.
Yeah, that's sensational.
That helps.
Yeah,
at
that's
the moment.
Brilliant.
So we're gonna finish off how I finish off all my podcasts, and that's with my Fast Five. And so
all right, now I'm getting nervous.
So it's like a 5K sprint to the finish.
Yeah.
And so I, this is.
Is it like the Ferber steps? Can I? Is it going to be? I can take it slow.
You can take it. You can take it slow. You can embellish. Some of the answers might be one word. Some of them might be a sentence or two. But you'll be right. No, nothing to be nervous about. No one has failed yet. No one has failed. And there's been no DNFs.
Excellent.
So. First question, first kilometre. What is your favourite running film?
Outside Voices.
Outside Voices. What's that?
Who's Outside, that? Joel Wolper, I think, on Jen Shilton. Now this is going to be like a paragraph. This
That's
is when
okay.
Mick Kite goes, now I need to get a muffin and sit down when he has to listen, read my messages.
Yeah.
It black and white, really lovely music, and just follow some of the things that she does.
Oh, so it's well made. Jen Shilton was in the
Born to Run
book. She's quite an amazing runner.
Yeah, really cool chick. So that was Outside Voices.
Outside Voices. Okay, I'm going to look it up. So I do this purely for myself.
Excellent.
I'm not doing it for anyone else. Number two, kilometer two, bucket list race. I mean, you've done a lot of epic races.
Hard Rock.
Hard Rock 100?
Without a doubt.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is it, do you have to qualify for it?
I've got my qualifications, so I've got to keep getting my qualifications. And I think I've got maybe two, four, I might have six tickets in the lottery for next year.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm planning that it's probably going to maybe take me 10 years to get in. So
really?
It's a 10-year plan.
Oh my God.
Yeah, really. I mean, I'm pretty lucky.
So hard.
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky with lotteries, touch wood. It's just the karma gods that sort of shining brightly on me. But maybe 10 years.
Amazing looking race. Looks
pretty
epic. Number three, your favorite post-race treat. So when you finish a big run, what do you like to treat yourself to?
I'd have to say, Bigfoot, the first thing I had was a beer.
A
beer means that you're not feeling nauseous, and a beer means that it's really well earned. So if you're ready for a beer, it's a good feeling.
I remember in Yorubilla 1 year, I said to a guy I was running with, I was like, I can't wait to have a beer at the finish. And he happened to have beers, and he handed me one at the finish line. I drank like two sips, and I couldn't. I wasn't.
Nah, there's something, because you're going too fast.
Yeah.
I don't think your stomach's ready for it.
I know, and it was, but the idea of it was good.
Yeah, when you're out there and you feel like a beer, but when you finish, you've got to let, it's almost like that's when you need that chocolate milk to let everything kind of settle a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, question four, I think I'm going to know the answer to this one. Roads or trails?
I love them, like they're both great, but it has to be trails.
Trails, yeah. All right, and we're going to finish off the final kilometre. It's not a question, I would like you to finish this sentence. Running gives me...
Everything.
I think that's a pretty good answer. You have a shop, you live, you run, everything you do in your life is around running, isn't it?
Yeah. Because it's not just running, it's like it's we're sitting down here doing this because of running.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and we're going to, what we do at home, what we do in our work, what we both live our lives around running, but it's not just the physical running.
No.
But our lives are around running, and it just keeps opening windows, hey? Like windows just keep opening when you're doing something that you love. And it's not like everyone can do that. And you and I made choices that work really well for us.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's such a simple activity, just moving one leg in front of the other and over across the ground and varying terrains, and it opens up, like you say, all these opportunities. And it's such a weird, I often think of it. It's so simplistic. It's such a simple thing.
But that must be why, though.
Yeah, I question it in a positive way. I go, I still don't fully understand why. And I've never...
Yeah, I'm actually quite the same.
Yeah.
Why does it have this impact on us when it's just running?
Yeah. No, it's fascinating.
Because it's more than just the running. It's more than that.
Yeah.
It's more than just running. And it has to be the hardest... The part where you feel the struggles, that's where we find it.
That's it. Yeah. Well, on that deeply philosophical note, we'll leave it there. So give everyone something to think about.
Yeah.
Beck, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been brilliant talking to you, Daniel. Yeah.
All right. Well, after your next big race, we'll have to have another chat. I'd love you to come and meet my wife. I think she would have a lot of good questions for you.
She's
she's a bit of a character, and she's quite popular on the podcast. So.
Oh, sensational!
Yeah. All right. Well,
that would be great. Thanks everyone for listening.
Come on into BKT Trail on Greenhill Road in Burnside. Do it. The best place to get all your running gear.
Awesome.
See you later.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Trail Runners Experience. I had a really great time talking to Beck Butler. I could have spoken to Beck all day. She's just got so many interesting stories and interesting perspectives. And hopefully I can talk to her again on the podcast very soon. If you live in Adelaide, come in and check out her shop, BKT Trail. It's all your trail running needs, from mandatory gear to poles to shoes, hydration packs. It's a really great shop, but make sure you be prepared to go on a shopping spree. If you don't live in Adelaide, check her out on Facebook. Check BKT Trail out too. Also, before I go, don't forget that I am a coach, and I love coaching. It's what I do as a full-time job. So if you would like me to be your coach, hit me up on the Facebook page for Distance Runners Unlimited, or check out my email address. It's just distancerunnersunlimited@gmail.com. I love coaching. I can coach from any distance, from 5K to ultra marathon. And I love helping. It doesn't matter if you're slow or fast or somewhere in the middle. I'm your man. All right. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on the Trail Runners Experience.